Spirit Blade Underground episode
482.
Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I am Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live increasingly for Jesus Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, some reactions and thoughts about Thor Ragnarok and what it may indicate about the future of Marvel movies, and a spotlight on Christian fantasy authors as we jump back over to the Christian geek radar. All right, let's get to it. My father once told me that I could use my powers to make a difference. He told me I had a responsibility to help others. He told me I could save this world. Save everyone. Then he told me, walk the gerbil, walk the gerbil. Frickin' weirdo. Thor Ragnarok. I apologize, I'm in a different space in my office. I've actually got everything set up to get ready for my 24-hour Extra Life Marathon starting tomorrow, November 4th at 6 a.m. I'll come back to that at the end of the review. Anyway, the synopsis for Thor Ragnarok from IMDb says, Thor is imprisoned on the other side of the universe and finds himself in a race against time to get back to Asgard to stop Ragnarok, the destruction of his homeworld, and the end of Asgardian civilization at the hands of an all-powerful new threat, the ruthless Hela. All right, so apologies right off the bat to those who are tired of hearing me say that I don't enjoy Marvel movies. I'm going to try and do something a little different with this review and not, you know, harp on those kinds of things. So please bear with me. I just want to get a couple things out of the way for those who aren't familiar with my reviews and kind of my take on the Marvel movies. For those people, I'll just say I'm largely bored by most Marvel movies because they lean heavy on humor that doesn't make me laugh. And they do that, I think they give time to that in the script and in the edit of the movie at the expense of taking character development as seriously as they could. In particular, I connect with fiction that is character-driven and that tends to be more serious with emotionally intense stakes. So in superhero movies, I prefer, say, the X-Men movies or the DC movies over the mainline Marvel stuff. Now, leaving that behind and just kind of wrapping up my personal feelings about this movie, really short review here, but I'm going to talk about some other stuff related to it. I'll just say that, you know, hey, if you like most Marvel movies, you know, you're not watching this review to see if you'll like this one. If you like most Marvel movies, I think Thor Ragnarok is like most Marvel movies. So if you like those, go see them. If you don't, then don't see this one. So there you go. Yeah, that's the end of my review based on my personal likes and dislikes. Now I want to try and make some observations of the Marvel movies independent of my likes and dislikes for the most part, using Thor Ragnarok as an example and kind of a springboard for just kind of taking stock of, okay, where are the Marvel movies now? Where are superhero movies now? You know, and what does Thor Ragnarok indicate about where they are going, maybe? I would now officially classify most Marvel movies, with a few exceptions, as action comedies. Far from being comic relief, the comedy content is actually, it strikes me as being the main content increasingly in Marvel movies. Again, with a few exceptions. Ragnarok arguably amps up the comedy even more, bringing it, like I thought, surprisingly close to actually a spoof of superhero movies. Multiple times in this movie, they'll set up what would typically be the moment for a hero to do something heroic or say something heroic or have a moment where they're successful, and then they yank the rug out from under that, you know? So it'd be, you know, in some ways it reminds me of superhero spoof
movies and TV shows that I've seen in the past. Now, it's been a few years since I regularly followed any comic books. Marvel's in particular, I've only really followed for, a long time, the Ultimate Marvel Universe stuff, which at the time they created those comics was, the vision for that was, let's create comics about Marvel characters in the style that we would want them to be made in if they made movies about these characters. And so at that time, they had a much more serious take on them. It's, if you read, the first two volumes of like the Ultimates, it's like night and day from what Marvel movies are now, but anyway, even their mainline comics, I'd be surprised if in your average Marvel comic book being printed today, there was the same percentage of time in dialogue and space and dialogue given to comedy and punchlines compared to the movies. It seems to me that the Marvel movies, it's really interesting to kind of watch this unfold, they seem to have become their own thing for their own audience. And that audience is certainly not limited to comic book fans or even superhero fans. They've just kind of figured out, okay, this is what is connecting with people. So let's do this. And they've kind of locked into that. They're no longer, I don't think, and maybe those of you that are reading current Marvel comics can correct me on this, but I don't think they're particularly concerned anymore, at least if they were before, in faithfully bringing the current or recent feel, I know that's that's vague language, but the current or recent feel of Marvel Comics to the big screen. My guess is if I were to open up a Marvel comic book today, I would have an experience that has a more serious tone consistently throughout than the average Marvel movie. When I see how Thor was written in this movie compared to how he was written early on, like in the first Thor movie or in the first Avengers movie, they really played up just kind of his alien nature. He spoke in a more formal manner, not with the thees and thous, but still much more formalized than Ragnarok. Ragnarok, he still has, kind of like a little British accent type thing going on, and he still has a good amount of formality in his language, but he's using these expressions and types of humor all the time that are just very much like Western, very American, very, modern pop, So it's just interesting to see how they're de-emphasizing character and they're just saying, let's just play. Let's just play with the humor and the jokes, and our movies aren't going to be about like these consistent and developing characters, And for a lot of people, that's fine. They go to movies for that kind of just kind of like, hey, let's have fun kind of experience, And that's not quote unquote fun for me, but it really seems to be working for them. And it's been interesting to see them go further and further and further in that direction. I'd be really interested to see if that trend continues. And if Marvel, because my guess is if that trend, if they keep ramping up the comedy more and more and more, with where Thor Ragnarok sits, I don't think it's very many steps further to take it all the way to spoof, to take it all the way to like the Tick Amazon series. Or the movie Mystery Men, or maybe even eventually to something, like the 60s Batman show or the Joel Schumacher Batman movies, where it's almost like making fun of stereotypes and tropes and stuff of superhero movies and comic book movies and stuff. This movie really, I felt like, was moving in that direction. So I'll be interested to see if that's what audiences are going to want, that's what they're going to respond to, and they'll keep taking the Marvel movies further and further in that direction. The Black Panther trailer doesn't look like that's what it's... If anything, the Black Panther trailer looks like one of the most serious Marvel movies I've seen in a little while. But then again, I've been surprised with trailers in Marvel movies, like, oh, they're going for a more... Oh, no, I guess they're not going for serious, when I sit down in the theater. The jury's out, until I see that one. They'll try to go that route and audiences will react negatively to it. Or maybe just audience tastes will change and so they'll start scaling back on the comedy. I don't know. I'm very interested to see what happens. What's interesting to me is that we are, I think, finally getting to a place where comic book movies are not easily defined in terms of tone. At one point, I thought all superhero movies would adopt the same tone and comedic content of the Marvel movies. And not being a fan of that tone, I was, you know, a little bit bummed out about that. But, you know, the DC movies, I felt they've had opportunity now up to this point to significantly change their course from where they were going with Man of Steel, and even since Batman versus Superman. And they did some, you know, I felt like they were trying to maybe kind of imitate Marvel a little bit and bring some levity into Suicide Squad, but still not near as much as they could have. And if anything, Wonder Woman, I felt like, stuck to a lot of the guns established by, you know, Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman. Yes, it did have more humor. Still humor of a different type, though, that's born out of who the characters individually are, rather than one punchline fits all characters and we can just pass them around, you know. So it's interesting to just to see that there's still there's diversity in what comic book movies are, you know. So the DC movies, I think, have largely kept their mix of darker tone mixed with stylized visuals. The X-Men universe has stayed in what I think of as a middle ground of mixing both serious moments and humor. And then smaller movies like, say, Slight are stripping away costumes for a scaled back and grounded look at superheroes. And there seems to be room for all these kinds of things. And I don't know about the audience for Slight. I don't know what the reception was for that. But by and large, I feel like the X-Men movies, the DC movies, they have their audiences. You know, they are finding success. Now, Marvel movies do seem to have the largest market share, and I can at least admire their business savvy, even if their content doesn't connect with me. But they are just one option now. There are these other, not just surviving, but arguably thriving with their own, you know, audiences now. You know, these other options, these other cinematic super, you know, human universes. And so the Marvel movies are really just one option now. I mean, at long last, like comic books themselves, we seem to be getting into territory that allows for numerous tones based on the similar subject matter of people with superpowers, many of which wear, you know, striking, you know, wardrobe choices, you know. Even in the various comic book movie continuities, we see some variation in tone, especially with the recent movie Logan, which was significantly darker and heavier than any of the X-Men movies before. And then I think you could say arguably in the Suicide Squad movie. Now, again, I think that maybe had less to do with the original intent and some of kind of like the comedic choices, and certainly the music that was chosen for the score was probably more about a response to what Marvel was doing than really being true to its original vision. That's kind of what I've heard through the grapevine about what was going on in the making of that. I don't know for sure that that's the case, but anyway, you know, there's still some variation there. And I would say more in the Wonder Woman movie, that would be an example of variation, where it has a lot of things in common, I think, with the feel of Batman vs. Superman and Man of Steel, but it has a different balance in serious weight and in comedy and stuff like that. So that means, and this is really cool to be able to say now, that not every superhero movie being made today is going to be for every superhero fan. And I think that, you know, because there are so many of them being made, that's okay. Because now, you know, I mean, there was a time where superhero fans like me had to put up with trends that they didn't like. You know, like I had to deal with Joel Schumacher's, at least, you know, Batman Forever. I had to, like, just kind of try to enjoy the things that I liked about the movie that were true to the kind of Batman experience I wanted to have. I would even say the same thing was true to a degree with the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. Like, well, there's some things I'd like to be different in a Batman movie here, but there's still, you know, I can you know, take the things that I'll just deal with the things that I don't like, you know. But now I feel like there are so many superhero movies that if I wasn't, like, creating content that's based on reviewing all these movies and stuff, I just wouldn't go see the Marvel movies. And I'd still have a number of superhero movies coming out on a semi-regular basis that I'd be able to enjoy, that would scratch that itch, you know, and I'd probably still be watching more superhero movies in theaters now than I was, you know, 15 years ago or so. So, Anyway, it's a lot easier to get your particular kind of cape fix, that live action cape fix that you want to get these days. And so that's cool. I think we're in a golden age of super flicks, and we've got choices, and I think that's really neat. Okay, so nothing else really to say about this movie, that you could just watch some other Marvel movie reviews and get my thoughts on this movie. As far as like relevance, is there any, you know, worthwhile themes or, you know, spiritual things or moral or philosophical kind of things going on that stood out to me, you know, that might, what do I usually say, that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation? Well, as I've said in a number of movies before that I didn't connect with or didn't enjoy, I tend to not see the themes in those types of movies. Not the ones that I like out and out hate, because I don't out and out hate the Marvel movies, you know, but in the movies that I just kind of go and I'm just kind of uninterested the whole time, I tend to not, you know, themes that might be there don't tend to stand out to me, so none did in this movie. But I mean, if you liked Thor Ragnarok, I'd be interested if some themes really demanded your attention and really stood out to you. So I'd be curious to hear about those in the comments if you found any. Alright, well, I have no idea what your tastes are in movies, but if I were a time traveler, I would go back in time and say, Peter, come on, you know, skip this movie. You've got extra life to prepare for, so just do that. This one's rated PG-13 for intense sequences of sci-fi violence and action and brief suggestive material. I want to remind you guys to go check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, POSTOS, Helix Reviews, and the Retro Rewind podcast. For more information about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Wow, you guys, another year and another extra life has come and gone. It goes so fast. I mean, I spend definitely about a month really kind of, you know, engaging in prep for it, and it noticeably, you know, cutting into my time and requiring a lot of prep to both do my own fundraising and then also to send out resources and emails and stuff to team members and to think about how I'm going to promote the thing and, you know, all these little things. for this event that, like, for, you know, the big climax of it, it comes and goes in 24 hours. And it might seem like, you know, doing a 24-hour video gaming live stream, which this was my fourth consecutive year of doing this 24-hour video game marathon, it might seem like, oh my gosh, that's mammoth. And it is. But I keep forgetting until it's over every year how fast it goes by. I mean, I keep thinking to myself, am I going to have enough games to play? I mean, yes, it's an embarrassment of riches. I mean, I have plenty of games, but when you're, you know, for, I don't know about you, but for me, I can only play one video game for so long. It's pretty rare that, like, even back when I was playing a game that's just had an insanely attractive and addictive, you know, progression loop, like, say, Skyrim or something like that, I could still, on the rare chance that I had opportunity to play, you know, as much as I wanted, I think I would still only put in 4 hours, maybe, and then I'm done. 4 out of 24 is not that, you know, and you got to switch things up. Well, for me, I want to switch things up too because, you know, the overheating potential on any console, you know, even, you know, let alone the 360s. I don't have an old 360 anymore that's prone to overheating, but, you know, ever since that era, I've been pretty cautious about not wanting to overheat any of my consoles. And so, you know, for all those reasons, I was like, am I going to have not just enough games, but enough games that I will, like, actually want to play that will not just be monotonous and, you know, whatever, but that I'll be, that'll be exciting and engaging and, you know, and help keep me awake, most importantly, in those later hours. As much as possible, I did not want to get into horror games. I mean, they'll definitely keep me awake, and I definitely had some queued up and ready to go. But if I can avoid those, I really prefer to. Anyway, so let me give you the skinny on how it all went. Our team goal this year was to raise $750 for various. Each team member selects their own local children's hospital that's part of what's called the Children's Miracle Network, and that's an organization that provides. It's a fund, basically. I think that that provides medical care to children whose parents could otherwise not afford it. You know, and I've really liked this event because even though it's not specifically a Christian event, I think it's a great way to carry out the call from Scripture to care for the poor. These are people that need help and financially cannot afford it. So absolutely, it's, I think, carrying out that command to care for the poor. And also it's kind of like a nice baby step. I don't know about you, but for me as a geek, I just tend to kind of get in my own little world with my own little thoughts, you know, and I just forget that there's a world around me that that needs the hands and feet of Jesus, us as the church, to bless and help and lift them up, you know. And so this is kind of a nice baby step. It's like, yeah, it's hard to think outside of myself, but you know, I kind of get to mix it in with one of my favorite geek hobbies. So anyway, if you're new to all this, this is your first time listening to the podcast, that's a quick catch up on what this thing has been all about. Anyway, our team goal was to raise $750, and we crushed it. Holy cow. As of the recording of the live stream, we had raised $1,136. And I just got notifications. I haven't seen how much yet, but I just got notifications that one of our team members has gotten one or two more donations. So $1,136 and climbing. That's huge. That's huge, guys. I mean, our previous team record was $660. This is over $400 more than we've ever raised before. It was just crazy amazing what God did through the generosity of those who heard about our fundraising, through the work and efforts of those on the Christian Geek Central Extra Life team, through those of you who helped spread the word. So I want to thank the Christian Geek Central Extra Life team members Francisco Ruiz, Aaron Huey, Timothy O'Donnell, Franklin Gander, Susan Segar, and Mike Morjon. Thank you so much, guys, for being a part of this with me. And you're just fantastic, fantastic. Now, I do need to talk about the stream that I did, which some of you may have tried at least to tune in for, and I thank you for that. The stream had some serious problems. There was like I spent basically what it boils down to is frames were being dropped all over the place, to the point where most of the time the audio, I was told by people in the chat, was still coming through fine, or fine-ish for the most part, I guess. But at times it got so bad that it was like watching a slideshow with my narration in the background. I mean, really, really bad, frame issues. And I got disconnected and reconnected a few times. You know, every time it would disconnect, my software would then kind of like auto reconnect and stuff. And that every time that happened, it would cause like the screen that I, just because of the software and hardware combo I have going on, the screen that I'm playing games on, to go black for 5 seconds when it disconnects, and then go black for 5 seconds again as it's reconnecting. And you know, when you're playing an action game, that's the 5 seconds of doom. So, you know, it was messing up my ability to actually create the content that the stream was intended for. And of course it was, you know, completely shutting off the ability for anyone else to watch that content. And that got better. I mean, the disconnects got better for a little while, but I mean, the frame rates were still lousy, I think, most of the time. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't watching the stream very much myself. And just checking in now and then as I was able. I had to focus on my game playing screen so I could keep the content going. But anyway, it got better for a little while, and then as far as like disconnecting, reconnecting, and then around 6:30, I want to say, I took a dinner break at 6 o'clock, so halfway through. And then I came back, and it was just bad. It was bad. It was, you know, doing its disconnection thing again. And people, at that point, even the audio, I think, was going out. And I was having to use the chat room myself in order to just communicate with people that were in the chat. And basically, I gave it another 30 minutes for it to correct itself. And keep in mind, I had spent, in the middle of the afternoon, an hour and a half where I just unplugged to troubleshoot this thing. I even went out and bought a new modem, which that kind of sucked. I mean, we knew we would need to get an upgrade, we'd need to upgrade our modem in the not too distant future. You know, we could have, I mean, it's possible we could have waited a year or maybe even 2 years before upgrading our modem. And right now, you know, we just moved into a new house. We're trying to anticipate and prepare for the surprise costs, which we've definitely had plenty of those, you know, as we kind of figure out this house and what its surprising needs are, you know. And so this is, you know, not a time where we've wanted to spend any money. So, but I did end up going, I was like, well, okay, this very well could be it, you know? So I went and got a new modem. It ended up not being the fix we needed. It might've contributed a little bit to making things a little bit better, but I mean, ultimately, you know, what I learned during the process of troubleshooting and all this, and after, you know, and hooking up the modem, there were outages going on in our neighborhood that I had no control over. You know, it was just our cable service provider, or internet service provider, which is the cable company. You know, it was just going to be up to them to fix it at whatever pace they could and were willing to fix it. Dang it, that really sucks. I did hear, funnily enough, I did hear after the weekend, as I was kind of catching up with some of the video games media outlets that I enjoy, that they, during Extra Life, were having, like, I guess with Comcast was their provider out in, like, the West Coast area, major problems with the internet as well during the Extra Life weekend. So I don't know if there's any connection there. Really, really frustrating. Anyway, so I decided, and about halfway through, and there's a video up on the YouTube channel that kind of explains this. I was just like, I'm gonna shut down the stream, guys. I'll give it another 30 minutes to see if this thing gets corrected, if the, you know, cable, you know, internet company, you know, is able to fix this, and then I'm just going to shut down the stream, because it was turning off and turning on stuff to the point where, like, it was disrupting my ability to create the content of a video game marathon for anybody to watch, you know, even in the future, let alone, you know, right now. So I decided to just take the whole thing offline. I felt really bad about that, you know. But I did continue my marathon, and I did continue recording it, kind of in the same way that I would record, like, a trial and error video, where I, you know, I have an awareness that this is going to be edited down later and stuff like that. And so the final product, I didn't talk as much once I was offline, just because I didn't have the chat to kind of keep me chatty and stuff like that. So I think when it's edited down, there will be less footage for me to share of the back 12 hours compared to the front 12 hours. But all of that will be edited down, as I usually do with live streams, into to be released as videos on YouTube. And I was recording locally, not using, like, the YouTube feed video. So there won't be any of that, the framey crap that was going on in the edited versions that I put out. So anyway, I'm so sorry that it happened. I wish that there was something more that I could have done about it. But those that were in the chat were gracious and patient. You know, we were disappointed. But I think the general attitude at the end of the day, what I was getting from the chat, what I was feeling, what I had been praying about at the beginning of the chat, actually, that I think the Holy Spirit just kind of answered that prayer and kind of prepared me for what was going to happen later on. But I just prayed for contentment, for God to do what He wanted, to allow me and everyone involved in the live stream interacting with it to just be used and ready for whatever God wanted to do, you know. And I felt like when the moment came that God allowed all this stuff to happen, that we were prepared for it. I mean, certainly disappointed. But I think at the end of the day, ultimately content to, you know what, let's just let God do what He wants to do with this, you know, because He can take these things, even if we can talk about, like, allowing versus causing and the relationship to time. That's a bit of a, you know, philosophical rabbit trail I won't go on, but let's just use the word allow, that God can take these things that happen and that He allows to happen and use them to, I mean, perfectly bring about what He wants to bring about in the end. So, I felt like the attitude at the end of the day was, you know, we're content. You know, this is an easy thing. We'll just call this training for being content when actual bad things happen, compared to, oh, your poor little video game stream didn't work out. Things did get a little kooky in the late hours once I was offline.
and what I did to stay awake. We'll hopefully make some fun video for you guys later on. But yeah, those edited highlights are still coming. So I want to thank everyone who donated toward my fundraising efforts or toward those of a Christian Geek Central team member, or who spread the word, or who watched what they could of the stream, or who logged onto the chat and encouraged me and gave me things to talk about. Despite those stream problems, my personal energy stayed stronger throughout this marathon than it ever has before. And we also shattered our previous team record by over $400, and it was among the most warm and supportive experiences I've had with the chat during a live stream. So in so many ways, it was just a real blessing, and I just saw God doing great things through all of it. I'm already looking forward to next year. In the meantime, my next live stream will probably be in February. I'm not sure exactly what the theme is going to be yet. I have a couple ideas, but I'll have more details as we get closer to that. At SpiritBlade.com this week, you can get the bootleg episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, and I want to thank the contributors to that, including Drew Rubb, John Wilkerson, Ken Harmeyer, as in Ken from Honolulu, who we haven't heard from in a while, and Matt McKinney, and special thanks to Winston Crutchfield, who Mind Spike on the forums, who came up with the idea, reached out to contributors, and just made the whole thing come together. It was a big surprise to me, actually. I was in the middle of just troubleshooting, getting in the middle of the week, getting ready for Extra Life and stuff, and I went into Blogger, which we use for the Christian Geek Central website, and was doing something else in the back end of Blogger, and I saw this post that was, you know, ready to go up. It was, you know, in the draft phase or something, called this, you know, bootleg episode Spirit Blade Underground. I was like, what the crap? Winston, what are you doing? And it was so cool to see what it was and what they were doing. I felt so loved. In my email to Winston after the fact, after seeing it, you know, I compared it to, you know, the pretty girl at school telling me that she likes me. You know, I just felt so loved. So thank you all so much that were a part of making that happen. And of course, a special thanks to Winston. Thank you, Winston, for thinking to do that and for making that all happen. Wow. I recommend everyone check out that episode. I did put it into the main feed for the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, so check that out, and you can hear some of the diverse voices and personalities that make up our community. Really cool, guys. Thank you very much. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. We didn't have a podcast last week, so I got to catch you up on what's been going on at youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral. I put up the video, Should Christians Enjoy Scary / horror entertainment, which of course was kind of timed for Halloween, but you know, us horror geeks, you know, enjoy this stuff all year round. So hopefully that is still relevant to you. Also, my review, my trial and error review, as it were, of Wolfenstein 2, The New Colossus, went up, as well as my trial and error review for Assassin's Creed Origins. Wow, two big releases in such a short period of time. That was a beast to keep on top of that. Let's see. I also put up a video called Moderation in Hobbies and Uncertainty in Faith, which were two of the main topics in this segment of highlighted clips from my Conflicted Gaming live stream, part three of my Conflicted Gaming live stream, Moderation in Hobbies and Uncertainty in Faith. And then also my thoughts on Thor Ragnarok and what Marvel movies have become. That's up now. And then if you're curious, just as, you know, to kind of see what was going down and what I was saying about it, you know, you can see that video, Where is the Extra Life live stream, which I recorded and uploaded in the middle of the marathon to explain what was going on. And then lastly, Doctor Who and the Devil, which is the video version of the article from Speculative Faith that I shared not long ago. And while you're there, if you want to like, share, and subscribe, that is a nice way to help to grow our community, so I'd appreciate that. At youtube.com/spiritbladevideos, you can also get this at spiritblade.com on our news page, is my October video newsletter, where I just talk about like some timetable related stuff for an upcoming announcement. There's a big announcement about kind of like where things are at and where they're going on the audio production side of things for Spirit Blade Productions. There's been a little bit of a delay in my timetable for when I'm going to share that announcement, and I talk about that in that video newsletter. And then let's see, also on the Christian Geek Central Facebook and Twitter pages, the topic of the week is whether or not you find yourself getting into internet debates. And I put that on the table by saying that I want to define debate in this instance, I put it in quotes, I think, every time I mention it, because, you know, that term can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. And same with the word, like, argue. When you argue something, that can, you know, sometimes have a connotation that is unintended. I want to define debate for the purposes of this little topic as discussion, whether patient and even tempered or heated and furious. Either way, discussion with someone else over a point of disagreement in which you hope to either defend a viewpoint or highlight shortcomings in another viewpoint. I brought this up because about every week or so, or sometimes in longer lasting spurts that just kind of come in like unpredictable seasons, I find myself defending a view I've expressed on YouTube, sometimes of inconsequential, you know, just like arts opinion stuff. But it's usually of a moral / philosophical / biblical nature. It's funny, there's a couple of videos that, like, they're old videos, but like usually my two Doom videos, I have two videos on Doom, and those are the ones that like people keep coming back to and reviving conversations on. But anyway, so I often find myself defending a view that I've expressed on YouTube, usually of a moral, philosophical, or biblical nature. And it's been so long since I've been an internet user who isn't also doing work and ministry online, to the point that honestly, I don't know how often I'd find myself in these kinds of discussions if it weren't for my work. So I'm just curious if you guys find yourselves in these situations, or if you seek out discussions like these, or if you avoid them like the plague. And I kind of put a poll along with that topic on our forums. And then I shared that forum topic on our Twitter and Facebook pages. So you can leave your two cents on Facebook and Twitter, or follow the link from there to our forums and join the conversation. Let's see here. What else? Oh, yeah. The Spirit Blade Insiders got to the audio journal entries for the month of October recently, in which I talk about it being a crunch time, the stresses and setbacks of preparing for Extra Life and what effect that has on everything else I'm trying to do. And then also more of the Tully Files featuring Michael Tully's recording for the now abandoned Spirit Blade adventure card game. Michael Tully, the actor who played the part of Rand Galvanic in the Spirit Blade trilogy. So anyway, it's his recording sessions for the now abandoned Spirit Blade adventure card game, and then also numerous background voice recordings that he did, and Wacky Walla for Spirit Blade: A World of Shadows. So that was a lot of fun. We got a lot of blooper reel material from those recording sessions. Just as a reminder, guys, I'd be grateful if you'd leave a review of our audio dramas on iTunes or Amazon, and reviews and ratings for this podcast on iTunes or other podcatchers would be greatly appreciated as well. All right, that's it. Moving on.
Scanning for Christian geeks. Subject located. Verifying status. Christian geek status verified. Begin data transmission.
First off, with some interesting news from author Timothy C. Ward, who I've talked about on the Christian Geek Radar before. He's recently made a decision to step away from writing and go into ministry. And he, in a recent newsletter that he wrote and shared the background, he kind of gave all the details on it. I'll read just a little bit about where he's at right now, specifically in his decision. I won't read the whole thing. If you want, you can go to his website and get more information. But regarding just how he's feeling about his current situation, he writes, "I've been praying and have my wife's support, and since then, it has been amazing to see my heart change. It was so strange to be writing a scene in my book and thinking, man, this is pointless. I would so much rather work on my sermon, read my Bible, etc. In the months since meeting my friend," and this was a friend who had kind of asked him how he was feeling about ministry, which he'd been in and out of over the last 10 years, back and forth between ministry and writing. So he says, "Since meeting my friend, I've prepared sermons, met with church leaders, filled the pulpit at a church, and started a counseling relationship, not to mention restore my marriage relationship with the love my wife deserves. I'm happier now than I've been in a long time. This is a result of really boosting my time in Scripture, which has refocused my joyful dependence on God. I'm being humbled through His Word, and this has led to sacrificing for my wife and family. This has restored those relationships in ways I was blind to when writing progress was more important than their feelings. I can now see how writing was an idol. I took a good thing and made it the most important, and sinned in anger when I didn't get what I wanted from it. This break from writing fiction may or may not be permanent, but I'm perfectly content in it, and loving how God is helping me find joy in every moment and restoring my marriage to what it should be. I'm considering writing commentaries or inspirational nonfiction, but for now I'm giving my family more time than I have in a decade. I'm on a certification track to become a biblical counselor with ACBC, and am blessed in the ministries God is giving me. Anyway, I just want to give the tip of my hat to Timothy C. Ward, and just kind of sensing how God was moving. And I think he rightly points out here that this, writing was a good thing. It's not that he's saying that stepping away from fiction writing was a good thing, but sometimes those dreams that we have as creative people, I can speak from personal experience here, can become idols for us, and can cause us to miss giving priority to the things that really should take higher priority. So I think that's awesome, just that he's seeing what God is saying to him, and he's willing to respond to it. And I imagine God's going to bless just his usefulness in the kingdom as a result of that, whether that takes the form of ministry from here on out with no writing, or whether the writing comes back into the picture at some point. Either way, I think that's awesome that he's making the move that he has. So for now, we see one author that's going to be stepping away from writing in the Christian geek genre. So with that in mind, let me actually introduce you, hopefully, to a few authors that you haven't heard of yet. Danita K. Paul was one that I recently discovered, and she writes, she's got a number of series, the Chiral Chronicles, the Dragon Keeper Chronicles, and the Realm Walkers series. So there's 5 books in the Dragon Keeper Chronicles. Let me read just the description for Dragonspell, the first book in the series. It reads, "One dragon egg holds the key to the future. When Kale, a slave girl, finds a dragon egg, she is given the unexpected opportunity to become a servant to Paladin. But on her way to the hall where she was to be trained, Kale runs into danger. Rescued by a small band of Paladin servants, Kale is turned from her destination. Feeling afraid and unprepared, Kale embarks on a perilous quest to find the Meech dragon egg stolen by the foul wizard Risto. But their journey is threatened when a key member of the party is captured, leaving the remaining companions to find the wizard Fenwar, attempt an impossible rescue, and recover the egg, whose true value they have not begun to suspect. Weaving together memorable characters, daring adventure, and a core of eternal truth, Dragonspell, the first book in the Dragon Keeper's Chronicles, is a finely crafted and welcome addition to the corpus of fantasy fiction." And you can find more information about Danita K. Paul at DanitaKPaul.com. And then it kind of took me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, because in discovering her and going to her site, I learned that her daughter is also a writer, publishing both through Christian publishing houses and I believe mainstream publishing houses, depending on the kind of work that she's doing. But you can get more information about Evangeline Denmark by going to evangelinedenmark.com. And most recently, her book Curio is kind of like a steampunk setting, and the description for Curio reads, "Gray Hayward was always detested by the chemists, the magicians, come scientists who rule her small western town. But she has always followed the rules, taking the potion of the chemist's ration, taking the potion the chemist's ration out that helps keep the that helps the town's crap. I didn't rehearse this beforehand. Dang it, I forgot to rehearse this. But she has always followed the rules, taking the potion the chemist's ration out that helps the town's people survive. A potion that Gray suspects she, like her grandfather and father, may not actually need. By working at her grandfather's repair shop, sorting the small gears and dusting the curio cabinet inside, Gray has tried to stay unnoticed, or as unnoticed as a tall, strong girl can in a town of diminutive, underdeveloped citizens. Then her best friend, Wit, is caught by the chemist's enforcers after trying to protect Gray one night, and after seeing the extent of his punishment, suddenly taking risks seems the only decision she can make. But with the risk comes the reality that the chemists know her family's secret, and the chemists soon decide to use her for their own purposes. Panicked, Gray retreats to the only safe place she knows, her grandfather's shop. There, however, a larger secret confronts her when her touch unlocks the old curio cabinet in the corner and reveals a world where porcelain and clockwork people are real. There, she could find the key that may save Witt's life and also end the chemist's dark rule forever. So that's the book Curio, which you can get more information about. You can buy it at Amazon and other places. But Curio by Evangeline Denmark. More information at evangelinedenmark.com. And let's see here. The last author I want to draw your attention to is Patrick W. Carr, who has written, he's got two series, The Staff and the Sword and The Darkwater Saga. There are three books in The Staff and the Sword series. Let me just read the description of the first one in what did I just say? It was The Staff and the Sword series. It's titled A Cast of Stones. A Cast of Stones. The description reads, "The fate of the kingdom awaits the Cast of Stones. In the backwater village of Calliford, roustabout Errol Stone is enlisted by a church messenger arriving with urgent missives for the hermit priest in the hills. Eager for coin, Errol agrees to what he thinks will be an easy task, but soon finds himself hunted by deadly assassins. Forced to flee with the priest and a small band of travelers, Errol soon learns he's joined a quest that could change the fate of his kingdom. Protected for millennia by the heirs of the first king, the kingdom's dynasty nears its end, and the selection of the new king begins, but in secret and shadow. As danger mounts, Errol must leave behind the stains and griefs of the past, learn to fight, and discover who is hunting him and his companions, and how far they will go to stop the reading of the stones." So that's A Cast of Stones, book one of The Staff and the Sword series by Patrick W. Carr. You can get more information about other authors writing in Christian geek genres by going over to ChristianGeekCentral.com and checking out our portal page, where you can get info on geeks that are creating, Christian geeks specifically, creating video games, like talking about, you know, doing commentary on various geek culture stuff going on, authors, magazines, I mean, all kinds of stuff. So hopefully that's a resource that you'll find useful over at ChristianGeekCentral.com. All right, well, I should be back next month with more from the Christian. I really should have polished this up a whole lot more before recording. I'm a little pressed for time this week, so sorry about that. Anyway, more blah, 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 ChristianGeekCentral.com. Feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? Or what's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? I've definitely got one of those. We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you in order to do that. You can send an email or audio file recorded on your phone to me at PAETER@spiritblade.com. All right, well, stay tuned for DS9 Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 400 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God allows it, I will be sharing my review of the Justice League movie. Boy, I feel like every time I see one of these Zack Snyder movies, I mean, if you didn't know this already, I've really loved the Zack Snyder DC movies. And I really enjoyed Wonder Woman a lot. I definitely have mixed feelings about Suicide Squad. But man, those Zack Snyder movies, and both of the Zack Snyder movies that I went to, I was like, oh boy, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to like this, you know. And some of you are thinking, yeah, you were right. You should. Those were terrible, you know. But I recognize I'm in what seems to be a little bit of the minority. But anyway, I've always, you know, felt like, oh man, am I going to like this or not? I've always had different reasons each time for wondering, am I going to like this or not? And I have a different set of reasons this time, because as you may or may not know, Joss Whedon was brought on to help, adjust some writing, to write for some reshoots, because there was kind of a mandate that came down from the suits above Zack Snyder to do some reshoots that would improve the levity, put some more jokes in there. And Joss Whedon, of course, directed The Avengers and both of the Avengers movies. So take that for what you will. I think he might have written those scripts too. So I personally would not like a Justice League movie that reads on paper like an Avengers movie. But yeah, we'll see. And then you may also know that Zack Snyder experienced a major tragedy in his life. His daughter died. I think she might have committed suicide. It was really just a horrible situation. And so he stepped away from finishing up the editing of the post-production side of the film, and Joss Whedon came in and did that for him. And even though Joss Whedon has gone on record saying this is a Zack Snyder movie and his intent is to basically finish it like he thinks Zack would have done this and, you know, made the kinds of choices that Zack would have made, you know, they still worked together in, you know, as Joss Whedon came on to do rewrites and stuff like that. And so there's still going to be just Joss Whedon influence on this. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. And then also I read last night that there is a studio suit imposed 2-hour time limit that affected the runtime of Justice League. It's coming in at just under 2 hours of a runtime. And the DC movies up to this point, I think, have all been over 2 hours. You know, sometimes as long as like 2 hours and 20 minutes, maybe 2.5, I'm not sure. I think Batman versus Superman was the extended cut was like 2.5 or maybe even 3 hours. It's pretty hefty. And I've really liked that. I really like the time that it has allowed for those stories to breathe a little bit and have some kind of character-driven moments. And then also, you just get more bang for your buck. I mean, come on, more bang for my buck. And so I'm a little afraid. I don't know. Will the things I've loved about the DC movies hit the cutting room floor in favor of Joss Whedon punchlines? Well, I guess I'll find out next week and then share my reactions with you guys. Till then, please consider supporting the work of Christian Geek Central and Spirit Blade Productions by purchasing an audio drama, leaving a donation, or becoming a Spirit Blade Insider. You can get more info from our About page at spiritblade.com. Thank you so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at christiangeekcentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit spiritblade.com. Thank you for listening.
Coming through the wormhole.
The Dominion has endured for 2,000 years and will continue to endure long after the Federation has crumbled into dust.
No!
5 years ago, no one had ever heard of Bajor or Deep Space Nine, and now all our hopes rest here.
And that was Return to Grace, a direct sequel to Indiscretion at the beginning of the season, the Gul Dukat found his daughter episode. And here is the follow-up, where about 10 episodes later, Dukat has been shamed and disgraced. All his family has left him except for his daughter Zial, his illegitimate daughter, and now he's running a freighter. He has Kira with him. She's going to some diplomatic meeting in Cardassia, and lo and behold, the meeting has been destroyed by Klingons. So the rest of the episode is about Dukat and Kira having to work together with a ragtag old freighter and try to get running so they can avenge themselves on the Klingons, and we see what happens from there. This is absolutely essential for the arc because a couple major story changes happened in this episode that I don't want to give away because they're, you know, pretty interesting and exciting for their own. But the status quo, as is typical for Deep Space Nine, changes the tableau after this episode.
Well, I think it's also a good character piece for both Kira and Dukat.
Especially Dukat. You really get to know him in a new way this time.
And I think it's got some good... No, I wouldn't say so much twists, but there's a neat little action sequence where you're not really sure quite how they're going to get out of it. It's almost like a heist movie.
Kind of,
you know,
yeah.
Where they plan what they're going to do, but you don't see the complete plan, and you see them work it out.
Yeah, sort of like a Das Boot kind of thing.
Yeah.
And.
But yeah, it's a good episode. I really like their first confrontation with the Klingons.
Yeah.
When they come upon...
It's early enough, we'll go and tell you, because this isn't a story plot.
As Matt already told you, the Klingons have destroyed the meeting that Kira was en route to. And when they arrive at the destination point, there's a bird of prey that had been cloaked when they came into the system, and it just uncloaks and just sits there, mocking them, essentially, like, eh, what are you guys going to do? You're a freighter armed with, like, a little...
A pea shooter, basically.
Yeah, a little pea shooter to get asteroids.
And they use it. They use the pea shooter, and it does nothing.
Yeah, they
it tickles the Klingons.
And the Klingons come at them and fly, like, right over their ship. And I joked with Matt, I said, this is basically a Klingon teabagging.
Yeah, you can almost hear the Klingons on board laughing at them. They come so close.
And it's the disrespect just boils Dukat's blood.
Yeah, if you don't know Dukat, I'll say one thing. He's a very prideful man. He's been on top. He was in charge of the occupation of Bajor. He was a high level Cardassian official until his personal problems overflowed and cost him all his career and his family. So one more indignity is just one more too many, and that's really what drives the rest of the episode. Is Dukat's fervent desire to get back his old position of power.
Well, you hear him just kind of grinding his teeth and scheming about, oh, when I... And it's not an if, it's a when I get back into power.
Yeah, he has it. The man has an ego.
All the people that have wronged me will suffer. You know, it's... Ugh. And I kept saying throughout this episode, Dukat is so creepy sometimes.
Yeah, he's you would not think that Odo would be the less oozy of people that Kira involves herself with, but he's so oozy and slimy.
So slimy. He'll be saying things to Kira that aren't even supposed to be sexual, but you want to take a shower after he says it to her.
We work together so well, Major.
Oh. Go away, you weird stupid.
Yeah, I will
man.
Say this about Dukat. He is probably the most complex three-dimensional villain Star Trek's ever had. To use a Farscape term, I'd put him at least as complex, as interesting as Scorpius. And that's pretty interesting, because Scorpius is a really interesting character. And so is Gul Dukat. They're not identical, but they have some similarities to them. And, you know, he's a very... Well, I don't want to say he's very professional, because actually he does a lot of unprofessional things. But he is a very charming man. He's a very intelligent man. And you get the feeling that a lot of things he does are sincere. Not everything, obviously. Some things are clearly lies and facade, but some things are also pretty clearly sincere.
And the man very clearly has a duranium filter in his brain for reality.
Yeah.
He is capable of so much self-deception.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Rationalization.
He will completely delude himself as to what anything really means to fit his own narrow view of the world.
I mean, remember how you were talking about his remarks about, oh, yes, well, if I caught any member of my crew being...
Doing what I did.
Yeah.
He even said, what I did.
Yeah.
And yet, this is not a kind of behavior that he'll be doing more of this in the future. So this isn't even like the sins I once committed in the past caught up with me, and I'd punish anyone else. It's like the sins that once I have the power, I will still be committing. I would punish any man beneath me. It's like it doesn't even count as hypocrisy at that point,
and
because
he's
so open about it.
Seem to register.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's got a reality filter in his brain that is the most durable thing I've ever seen.
But there are some sincere things. He does sincerely love his daughter. I mean, she is his world. And you'll see where this goes in the future, at the beginning of season 6. We're still a fair chunk from that, but that really isn't my point, the high point of the show. So we'll get there eventually. But, yeah, there's not much more to say because it's a great episode, but there are things we can't give away of where it goes. But definitely check this one out. It is a must-see. So, we'll see you next time for another good episode. Not really a must-see unless you want to talk about the larger to all the franchise. But we'll go to another Worf episode after this and another visit from the great Tony Todd.
Ah.
We'll see you then.